This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Brett Fleming from Armit Wines. How are you, Brett?
I'm very well, thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today.
Not a problem. You're a wine merchant in London. In fact, you're not actually far from us. You're just down the road in Hammersmith. Is that where you're speaking from now?
That's where we're recording, or we're talking to you right now. Yes, we moved here officially only at the beginning of August because we used to be in Notting Hill, and the lease of our office expired, and it was an opportunity to, particularly given the COVID and the collapse in rental prices, an opportunity to look elsewhere. So we've refitted where we are now, and yes, we're in literally just around the corner on the roundabout in Hammersmith, which is only 4 or 5 stops from where we were.
Okay, lovely. Oh, that's interesting. So you managed to utilise the lease end to actually negotiate a better price. That's quite cunning.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had to try and find a new premise where it accommodated the commute for our staff. Mm. Of course, COVID is causing all sorts of problems, but one does hope it will go away. And I didn't want to move somewhere which would have really put a lot of pressure on our team getting into the office. So we were always looking within about a 2-mile radius of where we had come from. So that's why we ended up.
Okay. So what can you just give us a quick overview of what Armit's, not a big long one, just a, you're a wine merchant, but what does that actually mean and who are your clients?
Well, we're actually a distributor rather than a wine merchant. So we have exclusive agreements with various wine producers from around the world, predominantly Italy and France, and a particularly good one from Spain, where we will have exclusive rights to bring their wine into the UK and then sell them to restaurants, private clients, bottle shops, supermarkets, wine merchants. And so we are actually a distributor in the true sense of the word.
Okay, because I know you can buy wines from you if you're a private client. So you do sell to the public. You don't have a store, though, do you?
No, we have what's called the private client arm, but anyone can buy from our business, but you have to go online. But we actually employ a team of 5 people to manage the personal sellers and personal requests of what we call the high net worth community. And that's because some of our suppliers are the most sought after wine producers in the world. People like Tanita Sanguido, who make a wine called Sassicaia. We have a Spanish producer called La Rioja Alta. And these are all wines which, let's be honest, to the normal person in the street, they're not your everyday drinking wines. We're very privileged and very proud to have them in our portfolio. But as a consequence, we have a private client arm, which that caters to. So there's a whole world that involves of fine wine and trading and all sorts of other things, which is why we have staff members to look after that specifically.
For example, we don't purchase wines from you, but every now and then we'll buy a bottle of Sassicaia or two from one of our wholesalers that we use.
That's right, yes. So most of your listeners would buy wines, if they're buying the wines that we have, would buy them from one of our customers. And that might be Majestic Wine around the corner, might be Waitrose, it might be a bottle shop that's owned by one person. They may have 1 or 2 of those bottle shops, which we call independent merchants. Mm-hmm. It might be through Berry Brothers or Corny and Barrow or Laithwaite's or Leigh and Wheeler. These are all wine clubs and have their own outlets as well. So we tend to service the trade, who then service where the consumer would buy it from. Restaurants, of course, is the other one. But with COVID, it's been a bit challenging of late.
Yeah, how is that going with that? Because I imagine, because you're not going to participate as much in the retail market as opposed to maybe restaurant. You know, that if you're picking at the high end, restaurants are where most people try and flog their wines.
Yes and no. I mean, if you go to Harrods, they've got a bottle shop. If you go to Fortnum & Mason's, you go to Liberty's, you go to Selfridge's, these places all have an outlet that you can buy wine from. But as I say, the independent trade as well. We do a lot of business all around the country. And we don't just sell £500 bottles of wine. We also sell wines which have got a retail price of £8, £9, £10, £12. In Waitrose, for example, we have a New Zealand producer that we import exclusively, and that's called Astrolabe.
Yeah, I know Simon quite well, actually. He used to work for Whitehaven before he set up Astrolabe, and I interviewed him years ago.
These are accessible.
I noticed on your website, sorry, he's got this massive shaggy beard now. When I knew him, he was clean-shaven.
Yeah, well, now that you don't have to go to the office, I think a lot more men are growing beards when they wouldn't have done, myself included.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, no, I knew Simon quite well. I went through your list, actually. I recognised Sessakar and a few of the other guys, but to be honest, I'm not a big fine wine person. I like quality wines that have a particular value point. So tell us a bit about yourself, Brett. You're a Kiwi. It says you did some winemaking in New Zealand. Did you actually make wine or did you study it?
Yeah, I actually trained as a winemaker in New Zealand. To be honest, back then there weren't oenological degrees, so I did a degree in biochemistry, majoring in the study of yeasts. And then I left New Zealand pretty much immediately and went and made wine in France for just under 5 years.
Okay.
And I had every intention to actually fly from that experience, go back to Australia, actually, to London. And like most expats that come over to the mother country and have a sniff around, I just never got on the plane to go home. And that was 35 years ago.
Yeah.
So I've sort of forged a career mainly in fine wine and mainly in the global distribution of producers. So this is actually one of the first times I've been involved on distribution. I've tended to work for people who actually make wine and predominantly in the Australian and oddly the Italian sectors. So my last major role I had was taking an Italian business out of Tuscany into the global markets. I had a lot of success. It was a lot of fun. Spent a lot of time in Italy. My wife is Italian, so I love that culture. I love the food, the wines. But I was really looking for something to settle back down into and get my teeth into, which is when this role came up, I considered whether or not it would be what I wanted to do. And thankfully, obviously I managed to convince someone to give me the role, which they probably deeply regret. But we've had a good ride. I've been only in this role now for 11 months, be 12 months next in November. Mm-hmm. And Armoured is a unique business because there's not that many distributors in the UK that have got this high net worth fine wine arm that sell to directly to the private customers. Most distributor models, they import the wine. They will sell it to a restaurant. They'll sell it to a retailer. That's pretty much it. Armoured has this unique situation with these high net worths. And what it means is we're able to really get the pulse of what's going on in the marketplace because we have a what you call a B2C, business to consumer aspect to our business. What we don't have, and perhaps we should, but we're not particularly strong on the internet because we tend to sell to companies that are much better at doing that than we would be. It's sort of full circle from being a winemaker now to being a distributor. And I have to say, I'm really enjoying it. It's been a terrific challenge. I mean, COVID has really made things a bit more spicy to deliver what we've had to, but we'll actually deliver a profit, which I'm very pleased to be able to announce. It won't technically be official because we have to be audited first before I can really go public. But hopefully by the end of December, certainly January, when we have been audited, I'll be able to go public in the trade and illustrate that even with COVID, Armoured Wines has had a very, very successful last 12 months.
Yeah, I would have thought that obviously the restaurant trades are quite a tough hit for you guys.
Yes.
But the retailers, people are saying, well, you're not going out to the restaurant, so you've got a little bit more money to spend. So maybe trading up on some of the wines that you drink at home, perhaps, is what some people are doing. Is that your experience?
I'm not sure, if I'm honest. I'm not sure it's because people have got more to spend. There may well have been savings made during the COVID period of not traveling and so on. Certainty out there. A lot of people potentially can lose their jobs, especially within hospitality. So I'm not sure people are spending just because they've got more money. I actually think you'll find more and more people have been very cautious. All I think that's really happened in terms of the major consumer changes is instead of W1, Kensington, Mayfair, Knightsbridge, all those sort of areas, instead of those restaurants seeing continuous trade, a lot of the people that would come into London, they're having their meals out, but they're having them in the home counties where they live. We've actually seen an uplift in both on and off trade sales as a direct consequence of COVID outside of London, to the same proportion that we've seen a decline in our sales within London. It must be remembered my exposure to the on-trade in London was relatively limited. We, to your point, we sold our top-end wines, more expensive ones, to the Michelin-star white tablecloth restaurants.
Yep.
Weren't massively exposed to the on-trade. So when COVID hit, whilst it hurt us, I mean, there was definitely an impact on my business, it didn't cripple us. I didn't furlough any of my staff. We haven't made anybody redundant. We kept all our employees employed. And I'm very proud to be able to say that. But that's also an illustration of us not having been so overly exposed to the on-trade that we were then affected.
Okay, so the other thing that you guys do is you are involved in the on-premier. And we're going to talk to one of your colleagues next week about on-premier and some of the services that you guys provide and what on-premier is in a little bit more detail. But it's for the listeners who are not sure, it's just buying wines earlier, hopefully at a better price. But how important is things like on-premier as part of your business? You know, what is it, a big part of it, a small little...
Well, it's a critical part of our business because on-premier plays a big part with our private clients, but also the likes of Berry Brothers, Corny & Barrow, as I mentioned, some of the big merchants. And essentially, you're right, it's where you buy in advance a proportion of wine, and in doing so, you get a better price for that wine. The delay in receiving that wine can be up to 2 years. Bordeaux on-premier, you buy the wine and don't receive it for 2 years. Burgundy on-premier, you buy the wine and you don't receive it for, I think it's 12 months. Mm. And the idea is that you get first dibs at the allocation of the wines that are made. In Burgundy, it's very difficult because they're very small domains, very small vineyard holdings, so there's only a little bit of wine made. Mm. So the challenge for us is getting those allocations to then offer to our customers. Whereas Bordeaux is much more global. It generally, everybody gets the wines. There is pretty much the same price. So we won't make any more money in Bordeaux than somebody else would during the same campaign. But they're a very important part of our business, absolutely. Probably representing, I say, about 10% of what we do as a business.
And you said it's important for your private clients. How, in terms of your percentage of your business, what size is the total private client business?
Well, without going into specific percentages to give too much away, it is one of my largest parts of the business. That is certainly from a profit perspective, it's the most important part because, of course, we're selling to the consumer and we're not losing the margin all the way along the line as it goes through the chain. Mm-hmm. Having said that, though, it is a critical part of the Armit business, absolutely.
I can see why on-premier would be a key part of that because... if you do have high worth individuals looking to purchase wines, a lot of people want to participate in the on-premier market. And if you've got that access to it.
Yes, because what actually happens is if we just look at it in isolation, it may not make sense. But a lot of these private clients that we have been with us for 20 years. And every single year they will spend, I don't know, £5,000, £8,000, £10,000 with us. But they'll do that every year. And over 20 years, that stock is stored on their behalf. We store it for them on our account in bond, so there's no taxes paid on it. And that allows them, once the stock is landed and is physical in the bonded warehouse, that allows them to trade it in the same way you would trade the stock market. So they own it, but we manage their ownership of it for them. So Mr. Snodgrass will phone me up and say, sell 5 cases of my Chateau Latour in 1982, can you sell it for me, please? So we provide that service. So the on-premier is a gateway, if you like, into building long-term sustainable business relationships with our high net worth community, where we effectively act as a stockbroker, for want of a better word, but it just happens to be wine that we're trading. Of course, it also allows us to offer wine to the restaurant trade by saying to them, listen, we've got access to, I think at the moment, it's close to £80 million worth of ultra-premium fine wine that we can access by phoning up Mr. Snodgrass and saying, it just so happens that, I don't know, Zuma restaurant want to buy 6 bottles of product X, would you be willing to sell it? So the on-premier market isn't just about what it does in any 1 year that we do the trading. It's much more about a gateway into building our rationale as a business with our high net worth community.
Okay. Just before we go, you've been with the company for a year and this is the first distributor that you've worked for, that as you said earlier. What did you tell them in the job interview about what your direction was for the company? Because they always ask you, you know, where do you see you going? Where do you think the company's going? And being the managing director, you must have a fairly good influence on it. So what was the direction that you did the pitch on for your job
interview? That's a chunky question. There were a number of things, but fundamentally, because I'd been a producer all my life, don't forget I trained as a winemaker, I have appointed distributors and indeed dissolved those distributors all around the world for over 30 years. So I've been on from a producer side, I know exactly what I wanted out of my distributor. And I found it was a unique situation that I brought in that interview process where anybody else they had been interviewing, I'm sure they were far better applicants than me in many areas, but I would hazard a guess, none of them were winemakers and almost none of them would have actually been producers. They'd probably only ever been on the commercial side of the business, not on the production side. So I felt I brought a unique insight into what a distributor should be. And fundamentally, the two the key people that I think about most are my suppliers and my customers. And how do I connect those as a distributor? I need to add value to that chain. I need to have relevance to my supplier and having the privilege of representing them into the UK market to whomever it is I'm representing them to. So be that the restaurateur, be that the customer, the private client, be that the retailer. If I don't deliver that relevance, then why have a distributor? Why the producer would just go direct? So I was able to illustrate that in a number of different examples. And I guess there either was no one else applying for the job, which is why they appointed me, or I managed to convince them that that was actually not a bad philosophy.
Excellent.
I want to get Armit from currently about 20-odd million. I want to get us to 30 million pretty quickly. And ultimately 50 million, which I think is a lovely size for our business. I don't really want to get much bigger than that, but I think there's a real opportunity. The wine trade at the moment is under enormous pressure because of COVID. And I think Armit are in a unique position to be able to really capitalize on some of the opportunities which will come our way as a consequence of the pressures of COVID and indeed Brexit as it comes along.
Do you think those pressures are going to mean that it's going to be through acquisition or is it going to be through organic growth?
It'll be both. Acquisition isn't just picking up another distributor because they're in distress. There could be acquisition of brands that leave a distributor, could be acquisition of people, acquisition of customers. What you've got to remember is I'm profitable, I'm flexible, and we can make decisions very, very quickly to your point about, yes, being the managing director, I can make these sort of decisions. That may not be the case with many of the other distributors in the market, and that places us in a unique position to be able to really take advantage of opportunities that come along.
Excellent. All right then, Brett, I think we're going to leave it there. And next week...
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Very, very good, mate. Cheers.
Okay. Thanks very much.